think of a title.
Think of a title on the post show. What shall we call this?
God, Jeff goes bonkers.
Jeff goes bonkers. Huckster. Craft Huckster Radio.
Huckster's Paradise.
Craftyradio.com/Amazon. I think that's a good one.
I'll call it slash Amazon.
Buy her shit. All right, so well, we already talked about Amazon, so let's pull up the Amazon Anonymous. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it. Hold on a second. Cancel this. Close this. Delete copy. I need to send you the information before I go, so hold on a minute.
Sounds good to me. We'll pause here and find our Amazon Anonymouses, because I just was so anxious to record that we weren't prepared. All right, we're back with Craft Beer Radio's Amazon Anonymous, and some amazing shit went down this week.
Amazon Anonymous.
Some amazing shit went down this week. So we had a person buy the Hobart 500553 Handler 210 MVP for use with Spool Runner 100. This appears to be a welder. He bought it on his phone, and it sells for $849, which means we get $51 from that. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
We're bowing our heads and...
We joked about a Maserati, but this is the record holder so far on big ticket items. Yeah, someone spent almost $1,000.
We appreciate it so much that you'd, think of us before doing that. That's all we can say. Thank you.
It's the easiest $50 they ever gave to us.
Yeah. The thing that, do you want to talk about your item, any? I mean, do you know much about
it? It looks like a welder. That's about all I know about it. Let's see. Description. This package allows for greater welder portability and convenience through the use of multi-voltage plug. The option gives the welder the power to plug the unit into either 150 volts or 230 volts for easy change of the plug. The Handler 210 MVP comes spool gun ready for use with Spool Runner 100. Includes the following: comfortable 10 feet 3 meter H100S4.
Okay. We get the idea.
It's a welder.
It's a welder. Cool. The thing that I want to point out is the Garrett Pro Pointer, which is apparently a type of metal detector. Sort of, it looks to be like an after metal detector. In other words, you have a basic metal detector for finding something, then this helps you find it.
Yeah, once the metal detector's going beep, 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 there's something in the ground here, this will help you narrow down.
Yeah.
To help you find that thing faster. So it's kind of like the high resolution.
Yeah, it's like a precision instrument. But, yeah. I don't think it's necessarily good for... you can't scan a whole area with it, but you can find, once you get the little beeps, you can find where your metal is. It looks like an interesting tool. Kind of looks like a flashlight, but I guess it has... It works with I don't know how it works. I guess it's induction.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool, and that was a nice chunk of change somebody spent. So thank you very much.
Looks like our homebrewer friend is still stocking up his homebrew equipment. He bought a Brix refractometer, and someone bought some Xylus stoppers. Woohoo! Craft Beer Radio approved. Ting.
Ting. Okay. On to other stuff. So let's talk about Voyager 1.
Have you seen the XKCD comic about Voyager and how many times it's left the solar system?
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's be clear. It has not left the solar system.
Okay.
It has entered interstellar space.
Okay.
But it's not left the solar system.
Okay, so where do you define the boundary of the solar system?
Oort cloud.
Okay. So it's outside the pressure that the sun exerts.
Right.
So here's a question for you.
It's outside the heliosphere.
Heliosphere, right. Here's a question for you. I was reading an article about this thing, and they kept saying that the particles from the sun were supersonic and then they were subsonic. How is sonic sensical in this environment?
Well, because sonic has to do with the medium, right?
Right, but it's a near vacuum.
But
so what is the speed of sound in this near vacuum?
There is a medium still. It is
right.
There is a medium of charged particles.
So what's the speed of sound?
I don't know.
I hate when the article writes it this way, right? Because everyone is presuming, whether you know or not, they're presuming it's around 700 miles an hour.
Right.
But it's not. The speed of sound in a near vacuum is a lot slower.
Right.
Much, much, much slower. The speed of sound in steel is faster than the speed of sound in air. I don't know for sure, but I was told as a kid, this has to do with like how you could hear a train put your ear to the railroad track before you could hear it in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that it's more to do with like conductivity than the speed of sound, but I'm not sure.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, they're kind of related. Well, I mean,
yeah, they kind of are.
It's conducting sound. It's conducting the phonons, essentially. Mm-hmm.
But it's denser, so it's a better conductor. So it's not really faster. It just goes further. That's my argument, where listening to a train on a railroad track through the steel will carry further, but faster is not the reason you can hear it.
It's not the reason you can hear it, but it may be the reason you can hear it.
No, because at the speed of the train's moving, at the distance the train is away,
well, the way you
the speed
can,
of sounds...
The way you could
irrelevant
test that,
at that
is,
point.
The way you could test that is so you could find the minimum or the maximum distance you had to be to hear it in the air, and then see if any further away you can hear it on the track. And if you can,
that's not the speed of sound. That's better sound conductivity. It is faster, but it does the speed of the conduction.
All right. Well, then
it's the distance of the conduction that is useful.
Okay. Then you find the maximum you can hear it and.
But I'm just saying,
when it hits that, you see whether you can hear it.
No, but I'm saying the test is you listen to the train track to see if a train's coming.
Right.
That's irrelevant of the speed of the sound transfer. You do it because you can hear the train further away. The speed of the sound transfer is irrelevant. It's the distance of the sound transfer you're using to tell if a train's coming. You can't hear it in the air. You put your ear to the track to see if you can hear it because you can hear further through the track.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
But it's not faster through the track. I mean, it doesn't matter that you can hear it faster through the track.
Right. It's an interesting question because if it wasn't a track, if it was a solid piece of steel that was, you know, 100 miles by 100 miles, then it would dampen a lot quicker or dampen a lot easier versus a track that's, you know, just one small steel thing.
No.
There's not enough.
My sole argument is that you put your ear to the track because you can hear further, not faster.
I don't have enough knowledge of the subject to give you an answer, but it sounds reasonable what you're saying.
Right. So, I mean, it was really probably just one science teacher back in junior high that tried to make an analogy and made it slightly wrong. You know, maybe that's my whole argument. Maybe no one else thinks this, but that's what I was told at one point in my life, and I argue against it.
Well, there are ways to measure the speed of sound in an object. So,
all right, I believe it's faster. I'm not arguing against it. I'm saying it's not the primary reason
why you hear the train earlier.
Right. It's not the reason that it's beneficial for you to put your ear to the track. It's because the sound carries further. The speed is not irrelevant in that equation.
Well, the sound absolutely would carry further because it's not...
It's
like
a denser...
It's not omnidirectional like it is in the air. It's directional because...
That might be something I considered. I considered it'll carry further in a denser medium because there's more material for the sound waves to bounce against, but...
What I'm saying is if it was just a sheet of metal,
right,
it would radiate omnidirectionally and it would not, therefore the, you know...
Right, the energy would be more dispersed.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now I'm thinking about like, well, there's still energy loss at the edges the whole way along because it's going to, some of that sound's going to disperse into the,
and it's tamped down into the ground and then it will disperse into the ground as heat. Yeah, there's, you know, but you're still directing it.
I have no first person experience of listening to a train on a train track. It's just, I've probably seen it in a movie, it's kind of an anachronistic thing anyway,
isn't it?
They do it in Lost Boys maybe, or Stand By Me. Stand By Me, I think they might have done it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the thing that you know, trains are used almost primarily. I mean, there are people movers in a lot of places, not in America though. They're not, it's not very much used for moving people aside from commuter trains, you know, like small, like metros and things like that inside cities. There's Amtrak, but it's not really well populated. We do a lot of driving and flying as opposed to trains. So trains are just mostly freight. And they've become kind of anachronistic as a feature of a city because they are mostly now on the edges of newer cities and certainly not anywhere near suburbs.
Right. You flying to Chicago, did you see all those airlines right by the airport there?
No, I didn't. I was kind of half asleep because I was tired.
Yeah, there's a... You know, I mean, when you think of Chicago, you think stockyards and railroad anyway. But you're flying into O'Hare and you're just flying over like... 100 rail lines, like all these boxcars and all this stuff. It's right at the airport there.
Well, what was interesting was flying into Missouri and seeing all the, you know, seeing the Mississippi River and, you know, it's a big, pretty big feature there. You get an idea for, and I don't know if, I mean, I must have seen the Mississippi when I was in Louisiana, right? But
one thing I noticed, I was watching the ground when we flew out of St. Louis and you fly across the river. All the farm fields are square.
Yeah.
Because they but then after about 10 minutes, you start seeing the round one. I'm like, wow, it's square. I'm surprised. I figured all farmers were using the radial air, you know, irrigation things, you know, those big things on the wheels that go around in a circle. And when you're flying out west, all you see is all these circle patches, right? With the corners, you know, dead, you know, not being grown as crop. And, you know, the first, I don't know, 50-100 miles from the river, they're growing square crops still. But then after that, they start going turning into circle crops. It must have to do with whether they don't need irrigation or it makes more sense that the irrigation is more traditional when it's closer to the river. I don't know.
A large supply of water. Water is not an issue.
Right. Yeah, but it was interesting how... I'm like, I thought it odd that I didn't see circle crop patches... Mm-hmm. You know, in southern Illinois, near the river. And yeah, after about 10 minutes or so, they started turning circular. I don't know. Just an interesting observation I had.
I was, so tired I wasn't paying much attention. And you had the window seat on the way in, so I didn't... I didn't have a window seat at any point. So
you had a window seat on the way into St. Louis. You sat right in front of me.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I did. You're right.
We saw the arch. The arch looked really small from the air.
Everything does.
I mean, it looked really small from the air. It looked like nothing. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's a little horseshoe down there. Whoop-de-doo.
The angle was also weird.
Yeah, the angle was weird.
So the Steelers are 0-1.
So flying into Chicago, though, I mean, the Sears Tower does not look small. It looks big, so...
Steelers are 0-1. They had an interesting game where they got a safety in the first 3 seconds of the game.
Oh, really?
A mistake by Tennessee.
I didn't watch the game. I was tearing apart that playhouse that you saw.
Yeah, they kicked off Tennessee, and the guy at Tennessee caught it right in front of the goal line and then stepped back.
Oh.
And, you know, I guess he didn't realize
it. Was he falling back? Or?
No, he was like right in front of the goal line, and he stepped back onto the
goal line. Kind of reset himself so he could figure out where to run? Or
He just was trying to do a fair catch, but he caught it basically at the goal line and then stepped back, and you know, for the 20, but he actually stepped back in, so immediately got a safety and then had to kick off the Steelers. And it was like, oh, okay, this is going to be great. I mean, a horrible way to start the season. And the Steelers, you know, were then pounding, and they got down to the red zone, and then there was a fumble, and then the game fell apart. So, it was, I'm not a huge Steeler fan. Really, I'm not a football fan in general, but my friends are.
You inherit it.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, I've gotten to understand the game more and appreciate it for what it is, and certainly appreciate it for when it makes my friends happy. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm all about that. But it was not a football neophyte anymore. Sort of a football intermediate.
Right.
But, yeah, it was a really bad game. They lost some people through injuries. It was not
I'm glad so I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard, you know, especially when you have the kids, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, hey, kids, it's a beautiful Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We're going to sit inside for the next 4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen. So, I wouldn't want to anyway. But last week specifically, I was tearing down a playhouse at my neighbor's house. His kids are older. His two daughters are getting married this year. And, so
didn't want to do it inside the playhouse.
So I was taking down. I gotta kind of rehab it a little bit because there's some rotten wood and stuff like that. And then we're gonna install it behind the shed on that platform that you saw. And it was tearing apart. It was.
You actually need all those lights that you bought.
All the lights. Oh, the. I'm not sure I'm gonna run electric out there or not. Well, see. I mean, I know there's a light on the front of it. Yeah. And there's actually a light fixture inside, too. I'm not positive I'm going to run electricity to it or not. You know, that's up in the air at this point. I got the whole thing torn down in less than 4 hours. I was really impressed. I thought it was going to be like a 2 or 3 day project. Right. I'd take it apart. I had it all torn down. It was at my house in less than 4 hours. I was really happy with that. But as taking it apart, their daughters and their daughters' friends had like scribbled stuff on the walls and whatnot. You saw the big peace sign,
mm-hmm.
but there was like, you know, dear Rebecca, I'll really miss you after I move. Love, Jacqueline, and stuff like that. I was like, kind of like sad. You like, you see all this like history in this thing. You know, it's like that whole like middle school like I'll remember you forever type thing. Right. You know, like and then like up. So there's a piece of wood that was like really high to the ceiling, and on the top part of it, which you could never really see, even if you wanted to, there was a "I love Alex," and I thought that was kind of cute and interesting. However, as I kept taking it apart, I realized like, you know, it was like not the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. You know, it's like NSYNC rules and I love Lance Bass or whatever, you know. So I'm not sure if Alex is a real boy or if Alex is a pop star.
A real boy? Maybe it's Pinocchio.
No, a boy that she knew from wherever, or whether Alex was a pop star, because there was a whole ton of, you know, NSYNC rocks and I love Lance and, you know, stuff like that. So I'm really curious whether Alex was a pop star. Or whether,
did she know Lance Bass was gay at that time?
Probably not.
Probably not.
not that I knew Lance Bass was gay today until just now.
Oh, really?
So.
No, he came out a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff's not one to keep up with pop culture, so I don't blame you. That kind of stuff, I'm kind of embarrassed that I know it, but yet I do, and yet I do. Let's see. We didn't talk about Breaking Bad last week.
Last week was the awesome episode, right? Yeah.
The week we didn't talk about the week before. I mean, so we didn't talk about the Jesse spills to Hank, Jesse spills to Hank episode.
Okay.
And then this week was the episode where shit goes down and it cuts off in the middle of shit going down.
Right. Now, this week's episode was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's one of the reasons.
And really, it was a huge, it was one, in my opinion, it was a transformational episode for Hank. It made Hank look really good, right? Mm-hmm. Because he did two or three sneaky tricks to fool people into mm-hmm. doing what he wanted. He fooled Huel. And then he did the whole thing where he fooled Hank or Walter into opening up. And, you know, by this point, you should be rooting for Hank to take Walter in. If you're not, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be rooting for that by this point. They did a really good job because, you know, earlier you're like, you know, come on, Hank, let him go, you know. And now you're rooting for Hank, you know. I mean, that's how I feel. Is that mm-hmm. how you feel too? Or
well, I'm not rooting for Walter White. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Walter White is a despicable person. If I'm rooting for anybody, it's Jesse. Just because he kind of got caught up in the whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
And he was manipulated and is constantly being manipulated, even by Hank.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. if anybody is just, you know, wrong place at the wrong time kind of person, it's Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
So you wish the best for Jesse, but you understand his predicament. Hank did what would be fatal on most shows, which is call his wife and say it's over.
So I think I told you what a coworker at work, she has a pretty good theory.
Yeah.
It seems very plausible. I told you, right?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. So this would be a very disappointing spoiler if it turns out to be true. So if you don't want to risk that spoil...
Wait a minute. This is not going to go out until... I mean, oh. It's going to be answered.
Yeah, I guess it'll be answered before you hear it. Yeah. So, but again, if you're behind or whatnot, and it's a cool theory. To me, it's a plausible theory.
A theory is not a spoiler. A theory is not a spoiler.
Yeah, okay.
A spoiler is when you have information and you know it,
but
for sure. Like, I have information about an upcoming episode of Community that I told Jeff,
mm-hmm.
But that I promised the person who I found out from that I wouldn't reveal.
I think people... So, like, for this piece of information, part of me would rather want to discover it naturally by watching the show than have someone propose it.
If you don't
it.
Feel comfortable saying yeah. it, then... Yeah.
No, I'll talk about it, but I'm saying turn off now if you're worried about that kind of theory. I would say there's a fair amount of chance of it coming true.
This show has never been very predictable, so I don't know.
Okay, so here it goes. Yeah. Turn off the recording now if you don't want to hear it. And that is that in the shootout, Hank dies.
Mm-hmm.
Gomi makes it back, and that's how, you know, Walt's not off the hook. But, you know, all the scenes you see of Walter buying the M60, picking up the ricin, is him in a revenge plot against the neo-Nazis for killing Hank.
Seems plausible.
Seems pretty plausible to me, but I wouldn't bet money on it, but... It definitely, I mean, I don't have any way to refute that. It definitely, yeah. I could see that happening, you know?
Yeah, I could see that happening, but I have no idea how it's going to
happen. Yeah. If Hank doesn't die in this gunfight, then the whole theory is bunk,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So Scott Sigler, you know, the novelist,
right, yeah.
beer pocket, or novelist and patio booker guy that
patio
I listen
book.
To. Patio books, as they call them. Patio novelist guy. He said, you know, when did I start watching The A-Team? You know, like, because that last episode,
yeah.
you know, there's all kinds. I mean, sure. We just talked recently about Greg Hazen have a good realistic grounding in guns, and lots of, it's really hard to be accurate all the time. But, you know, Gomez is out in the middle, and I thought he was going to eat it right away. And... thousand shots go by and Gomez makes it to the cover, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? It just seemed like,
well, I thought that that's how gunfights actually usually do work.
That is how gunfights normally do work, but that's not how TV gunfights work. It's almost like, come on, Gomez yeah. should be dead, you know. That's how conditioned we are to TV gunfights and how accurate people are, right? But yeah, you're right, in reality lots of lead goes flying and it doesn't hit anything.
This is, I mean, even in just the small area, there's a lot of space for things mm-hmm. to go. So, I mean, the question is, I know that most cars are not bulletproof, but the DEA car might be. Or might have bullet, I mean, not bulletproof, but certainly effective.
So, there's a couple things there. It might be. I would think it's unlikely because they're so expensive. They're not going to bulletproof all their fuel cars, you know? And even bulletproof cars generally aren't bulletproof against assault rifles and things like that. Right. So, I mean, there's a couple things there. Sure, the president's limo is bulletproof against assault rifles, but that's a whole different beast of bulletproof car than what the DEA would possibly do for their general use bulletproof cars, if such a thing even exists, which I'd be skeptical that it even exists.
Oh, I'm sure they have some.
It's like they don't put seatbelts on school buses. Why would they bulletproof every DEA car?
Well, not everyone, but I'm sure they have something that they would take out, you know, in a
yes, it would look like a SWAT truck.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but hiding behind they weren't like hiding behind door panels. So it wasn't that bad.
Hank's on the other side of the engine. If anyone's going to get shot up, it's going to be Walt, right?
Right.
Hanging out in the back seat. But, yeah, I'm not too worried about where the bullets go. Just when Gomi was out in the open, I'm like, really? You made it to cover? That's nuts. There's three guys shooting at him.
We'll see tomorrow what happens.
How many episodes are left? Four? Three?
Three.
Three. Shit's getting crazy, man.
Shit's got to get crazy.
Shit's crazy. I love it.
So
I love it.
What we did read is that Better Call Saul is coming.
Oh, yeah. Spinoff. Is it going to be comedy or...
I think that it will have to have a different tone than Breaking Bad in order to separate it.
Right.
It can't be the same kind of show. Now, Breaking Bad can be at times screamingly funny.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think this will be more comedy than not... You know, than otherwise, but it'll be a prequel.
Mm-hmm. Of course, because Saul's really gonna be kind of screwed up after all this happens. So,
so it'll be like how Saul got to his position, and maybe the last scene, the very last scene of the very last episode, will be Walter White coming in or something. But it also gives a chance for like people like Gus to come back. And Mike to come back.
That would be cool to see some of those. Like, just, it'd be more transient, right? It would be like maybe them passing in, I mean, not literally passing in the background, but plot-wise passing in the background, you know? I don't think Saul had much to do with Dos Pollos Hermanos before... Walter brought him in.
I mean, no.
Oh, wait, no, he knew the guy.
Yeah,
huh?
He knew
the
guy. Yeah, he got them together.
Yeah, you're right.
And he got Mike to clean up after Jane died.
That's right. Okay.
And there's an interesting story to that is that they wanted to have Saul do the cleanup, but Bob Odenkirk couldn't make it. Mm. So they invented the character of Mike, and he became an important part of the show.
Right.
That's a cool little aside.
Good for Bob. I'm happy Bob Odenkirk gets that role. This is all such a fun character.
I mean, Bob Odenkirk is did Mr. Show, and he's a comedic actor, and he did Ben Stiller Show, and he wrote Friday Night Live. He's a great writer, and you know, it's really cool that he's getting now lots of credit for doing. I mean, it's a comedic role in a drama, but he does play out the drama parts pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that, but that's because. It's often been said, but it seems to be very true. Comedy is the hard one.
Mm-hmm.
It's much harder to do comedy acting than drama acting. So if you can do comedy acting, then all you got to do is just slightly tone it down, and you got drama. Just, you know, because comedy is all about being big and overdoing it and being boisterous. And if you just tone it down slightly,
right,
you're essentially doing drama.
Yeah, so that'll be cool. Better Call Saul. I wonder if that's part of the reason they had that scene in the car wash where Walter Jr. was like, "Hey, Better Call Saul," and, you know, like kind of playing.
No,
that.
I mean that
because that was kind of comedic aside, right?
The best dramas have comedy in them. They have to,
right?
You know, the best dramas. I mean, you know, The Wire at times was a very, very funny show. It had to be because if you just have straight drama. Then it's not going to work. You know, Shakespeare, right. They're like Merchant of Venice is a very dramatic show, but there are pretty funny moments in mm-hmm. it. Things like that.
Right.
You have to have some levity just to toss up. And just like in a comedy, if there's no dramatic stakes, then you're not interested.
Right. Gotcha. Cool. I gotta pee. Anything else you want to go over?
I guess not. I mean, we went over a lot today.
Yes, we did.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.